Hello, how are you? Are you well? Are you healthy? Are you being safe, being kind? I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This is a special show. This particular edition of Tasting Room Radio, year 13, is special to me because when we launched, we have four segments in the show. We needed four friends, four sponsors who we felt comfortable with, who we believed in, who in some cases became friends or were friends, so that when I talked about them, I knew what I was talking about. And right now, we want to celebrate these four businesses who have stuck with us through thick and thin. Road 13, I don't know how many years now, but it started with Mick and Pam Luckhurst. Now it's Joe, their son. And Road 13 has just gotten better and better and better. Became Winery of the Year in 2018 in Canada. We're also going to talk about and talk to The Hatch, who are crazy smart and make wonderful wines. They make wines they don't even know they make wines. And they're building wineries as a home for these various labels. Even I don't understand because I've got to get there. I have to see it. It has to be a hands-on experience. So The Hatch will join us. And John Weber from Orofino, my fishing partner, great friend, the guy who said, take a look at this amylcamine, pay attention, it's important. This is where the fruit's coming from. He was right. I wanted to be fair with this, so I've gone alphabetically. So it goes The Hatch, Orofino, and Road 13. Next week, we'll start with Row 14 at Clippers Organic in the Similkameen, and we'll finish with Unsworth. Those are the friends of this show, and we thank them so much. However, this is, just to start, National Rosé Day. And who better to join me on the show than Master of Wine, Elizabeth Gabay, who, in order to write the book Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution, tasted thousands of rosés from around the world. Wait until she gets to Canada. You'll hear it. It's going to be right now. We start and salute Rosé. I'm a Rosé head. And then we thank our sponsors, as many as we can get in this show and starting next week. This is Tasting Room Radio. Cheers. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley, because all of the wineries in the Cowichan and actually across Canada have been asked to close. This is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual. And someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. Just a heads up, the wine club shipment is in June. And the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and take-out. And the new easygoing white blend, Island Melody, is now available at Save On Food and their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. I welcome Elizabeth Gabay, Master of Wine, and her book, Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution. You wanted to start a conversation. How did that turn out?
Well, it was sort of one of those interesting things where I have to admit that I was probably as skeptical as many other people at the thought of a book on rosé. There was three other books published last year reviewing a number of rosés around the world, talking about rosé and food, and I had this crazy idea that I actually wanted to find out, not to recommend necessarily wines, but to discover how rosé had evolved and developed and where it was going. And I thought it was going to be quite a small book, and as it developed, I became more and more excited, and so that was, I was convincing myself as much as I hope the potential audience.
I guess you're ground zero because you live north of Provence?
No, I actually live east of Provence.
East of Provence. North of Nice.
I live north of Nice, but my area of southeastern France is historically more connected with Italy than it is with Provence. I'm sort of between Piedmont and the Rhone.
But your reference for rosé is from Provence?
It was. Yes, I think so. I think Provence rosé is really responsible for making rosé around the world as fashionable as it is now. I think it's due to Provence producers and their desire to improve the quality that really triggered the excitement. So, yes, that started off very much as my point of reference.
Elizabeth Gabbé, Master of Wine. The book is Rosé, Understanding the Pink Revolution. All right, so let's have a couple of big questions here. Like, what shape, what form, what color is the revolution taking?
That's a very, very good question, because one of the things that I felt really came to light when I was researching the book was there is this massive amount of commercial rosé, which is very good because that's fueling the interest, and 30% and growing of rosé produced is light pink and very much in the Provence style, in that it, you know, dry, mineral, very fresh and clean. And so I wasn't really too sure where this was going to go. But then you get this attitude of, you know, people who were really into wine always want something that's different to what everyone else is doing. And so now you're beginning to see, okay, the people on the table over there in the restaurant have a glass of pale pink rosé. Well, I want to show I'm slightly different and I know a bit more, so I'll go for the darker pink. You know, it's this cyclical fashion idea. So I think darker pink rosé is possibly going to become a slightly niche, fashionable element. Older rosé, I think as rosé quality has improved,
right,
being able to have maybe a vertical tasting of rosé, tasting some older vintages, that's proving to be increasingly exciting. My own personal interest, I really do like natural rosé. I'm not that I'm sort of, you know, being funky and wanting natural wine and all of that, but I just think it's pushing the limits, a bit like Picasso does with art. I think doing natural rosé is really pushing the boundaries of what we can maybe find in rosé wine.
The possibilities of rosé.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm dying to get to this because you have a subject here, a segment of the book, just for the girls, ? Jason Wilson of the Philadelphia Inquirer highlights the struggle against the common perception of rosé as a women's drink. And here's the quote. What are you, a girl? Is this girls' night out? That's what a friend, an investment banker, said at a recent evening as the waiter delivered my glass of rosé wine to the table. I considered my manly friend from his pink tailored shirt to the insipid Coors Light he was drinking. At this stage of my life, I said, I'm comfortable enough with my manhood to drink pink wine. Yeah, that's right. I'm man enough to profess my fondness for rosé, especially on a steamy summer night before dinner as the sun begins to set. Maybe while poring over the sports page, too, if need be.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I mean, you know, this is an ongoing dialogue. I heard this rant about I'm not drinking pink 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I thought it would go away. What's happened since?
It's, so living in the south of France, yeah, men do drink rosé. My husband was confirmed anti-rosé drinker, not because of the colour, but because he said, this is not a style I like. And then, of course, we were tasting lots of different rosés, and he started to discover, oh, I quite like this, quite like that, and now prefers it to red and white. So, is it the colour? I mean, I don't understand why drinking rosé should be a girl's drink. Is it the colour or is it the style? Is it because of having slightly sweeter White Zinfandel style? Is it the packaging?
Yes.
Is it the marketing?
Yes.
So I don't know whether it's just the one element of the colour or whether it's the all these other elements combined.
Elizabeth, you say in the book, the obsession with the colour pink perhaps should take a back seat now and we should just get on with discovering great rosés from around the world.
So I'm actually thinking of enlarging my collection of black wine tasting glasses. I would hope the colour side is going, but I was talking to an Italian Ramato producer, you know, Pinot Grigio on the skins, mm-hmm. and he just couldn't sell the wine. So last year he put it in a clear glass bottle so that you could see the pink colour, and his sales went through the roof. So I think the emphasis is on the colour is going slightly, but I think it's still very much a niche market. And again, I think I would like to be able to see influential wine writers. You know, someone like Eric Asimov, who I admire his comments on rosé enormously. You know, he's in the right direction. To get more wine writers like that, please don't start your review saying this is shell pink or petal pink or a maiden's blush or anything.
New descriptors.
Exactly. And sort of if you do have to mention the colour, it should be, is it clear, is it bright, is it... It doesn't mean anything if you don't understand the wine.
Elizabeth Gabay, Master of Wine, the book, which is a fabulous read and a great gift to other friends of yours. Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution. And it is a pink wine revolution. As you say, Elizabeth, rosé was always considered the ugly duckling. But now the swan emerges. Is it fully swanned or is it a baby swan? What is it?
I think it's an adolescent. Can I go for adolescent?
Okay.
I did have a number of people when I started off writing the book saying to me, but you're a master of wine. Why are you wasting your time on rosé?
Sure.
And then you start questioning yourself and you start thinking, why am I doing this? And then I would taste some other wine and I'd go, wow, this is fantastic. And now I'm getting people coming up to me saying, we loved rosé, but we never wanted to say it out loud because we thought we were the ones that were wrong. And you have now given us the confidence to say we think this is a good wine, which is why I say adolescent. You know, when adolescents lack confidence and they don't really go out and say, okay, I'm good at this. It doesn't quite yet have the confidence to be a fully mature swan and say, I can take on red and whites in a similar level.
By the way, I just want to go back one question because you've reminded me of the term rosé. In fact, the term rosé has been successfully used to refer to the kind of dry pink wine that men can drink with confidence. It's so important that we keep their confidence up.
Yes.
Elizabeth Gabay, Master of Wine. The book is Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution. And I'm she doesn't have to convince me of too much. I'm a disciple already. And finally, just about Canada, you make the note that the imported rosé in Canada rose 116% between 2012 and 2016. Canadian production only grew 9%. However, I believe if you revisited those numbers, you would find many, many more rosés being made in Canada. And for those who are playing catch-up, I don't want to discourage anyone, but you have to get it right. You can't just make a colored wine and say, yes, you're in the rosé business.
I think that is a major, major problem. So some of the rosés I tasted from Canada were depressing, but not just because they're Canadian. Let's be honest, a lot of rosés I tasted from around the world were extremely depressing.
Yes.
And when you're faced with a case of rosé that you have to get through, and I kept saying, okay, let's just taste those rosés again. Have I been really fair to them? Am I being nasty to them? Let's taste again. So you'd keep tasting over and over again. I think actually maybe what I need to do is get out to Canada and try some more rosés. But whether I would have a long enough trip, I don't know.
I believe to think on that one. Well, actually, what's happened now, of course, is that both coasts are producing some incredible bubble, and some of it rosé, starting just outside of Halifax in the Gaspereau Valley. And then where I am on Vancouver Island, the same thing. It's the same sort of terroir. In the middle, it's Ontario. Quebec is, of course, has always been a home for rosé, always welcome there, and they're making their own now. But really, the Okanagan, it's Ontario and the Okanagan in Prince Edward County.
Well, that was something I think we don't realize when we're over in Europe, that having tasted, you know, both sides, just what a strong characteristic there is. It's not Canadian rosé. It's like saying European rosé. And I would love to be able to just discover so much more about it. I felt there were some interesting things going on. You know, I love this idea of using Canadian ice wine for the dosage and sparkling
yes,
wine.
Yes, exactly.
You know, just to give it that extra bit of local character. I liked the combination of varieties, which we're not used to over here. I thought that was really good. And Gamay Rosé,
we've
just talked about. I think I'm increasingly excited by Gamay as a rosé.
Well, welcome
variety.
To my bandwagon, because I'm a total, complete Gamay Rosé fan. Elizabeth, what can we tell the listener who has been walking around the outside of rosé thinking, do I belong here? Can you give them one entrance and piece of advice?
On looking for a rosé?
Yeah, that first rosé.
The thing that I learned most of all was get rid of any preconceptions of what you think a rosé should be, which sounds quite easy, but I think we are so often, because of this summer image, we're thinking of a wine that should just be refreshing and dry. So before you've even bought the wine, don't judge the wine by the colour. Don't think it's going to be always light and dry, so that you're a blank sheet of paper. Don't go for the cheapest. I think starting on any wine style, going for the cheapest, you may not get the full character of the wine.
Could I suggest maybe starting in Provence?
No, because I think Provence is... Well, yeah, you could. Okay.
I've spoken
to some producers who, some of the bigger people. I've got a funny feeling. I've got just things that people have said. Provence rosé that is shipped to America is not always the same as the wine that is sold here.
Ah.
I think there are a number of rosés that are available in North America that potentially are fruitier, maybe a hint more residual sugar.
Hmm.
Because I've tasted some wines next to each other where one was for the North American market and one was for France, and they are quite different.
Okay. The book is Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution. I am a total rosé head, and I invite you to go and find this book. Read it online, however you wish. Elizabeth Gabay, Master of Wine, Rosé, Understanding the Pink Wine Revolution. We thank her for joining us on Tasting Room Radio and Mulligan Stew, the podcast. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley, because all of the wineries in the Cowichan, and actually across Canada, have been asked to close. This is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual. And someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. Just a heads up, the wine club shipment is in June. And the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and take-out. And the new easygoing white blend, Island Melody, is now available at Save On Food in their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. They are offering free shipping for locals. They are doing a drive-through winery tent in the parking lot, respectful of social distancing. You can find The Hatch Wines at 3225 Boucherie Road, West Kelowna. They're open every day from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Online, you can find them at Hatch Wines. Or you can check out all the details at thehatchwines.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. And we come to The Hatch, my friends. If we're going to do the sponsors of this show, the supporters of Tasting Room Radio, The Hatch is home base. I have Jason Parks on the line. I never know what to call him. And Grayson Reardon, who is, in fact, the Zappa of Zinn at The Hatch. And the two of them are going to try to explain what The Hatch is about and what the hell is going on. Grayson, I need to know what's happened in the tasting room at The Hatch over the last three strange months, going on four.
We definitely had to shut the doors in the way that we traditionally operate for a little while. We also kind of set up with a drive-through, like pickup contactless thing in the parking lot. We did our very best to get some actual, like A&W looking signage and write a couple of love letters on some plywood and staple them to some pallets and wow. make it the most organized yet, traditionally. Hatch retrofitted experience as we could to make sure that the thirsty folks could get the liquids that they need.
Hey, Grayson, tell me, before I get to His Majesty, tell me about who the customer is for the Hatch. Who's attracted to the graphics, to the wines, to the sort of approach that you, because you're not like everybody else, which is maybe what the attraction is. Who is it that walks in those doors when they can or drive through? Are they tall? Are they short? Are they male, female?
All shapes and sizes and all variations of human beings through here. And that's actually, I don't know, I think it's one of the most dynamic things, a relatively absurd amount of different wines. And of course, with the fusion of the incredible like visuals from Paul Morstad, it's a bit more unconventional as far as like aesthetic might be concerned versus the rest of the world of wine. But we make so many different wines across so many different styles and positions that showcase different vineyards in the valley that genuinely the consumer base is like, it's pretty broad. Like at the end of the day, if you like wine and you come here and you can't find a single wine that you like, then I don't know, maybe you just don't like wine, but I think we have at least something for everybody across the various brands under this wondrous little umbrella.
Is it because, Grayson, is it because you aren't like the other guys?
Kind of just built on being the antithesis of pretension and all the pomp and circumstance and kind of intimidation that can be associated with the world of wine. Like my mantra since has always been that like we just want to rock and roll and share some good juice with you. It's not really about where you're at in life. You just want to get you what you like.
But if it's not in the bottle, it's all just BS. So let's get to the bottle for a second, Grayson. Excuse me. Jason Parks, how is it possible that you can that you can create as many wines as you do under as many labels as you do, and it all comes out brilliant? Why? What's going on?
Well, I don't think it all comes out brilliant. I think the beauty of the Hatch is that we get away with trying different things. I don't think all the wines always turn out perfectly perfect. And we just kind of go for it. I think we're supported by people that like the Hatch to do that. So we got a good following with a lot of support on it, and we're getting better at it, but they don't all work out, man. There's times where there's tears in the cell stuff, right?
Yeah.
'Cause there's a lot of different varietals and we're trying to get better at them every year. And sometimes we poop it and sometimes we pull it off, but we'll be good in about 20 years.
But you keep the ones that work. So let's talk about the ones that do work. What are the ones that you're most proud of?
They've all got their own thing. I like, there's a new Muscat coming out this year. We really like that one that we did this year. Screaming Frenzy. Meritage is always a good bang for the buck. Proud of the Rosso, the Bianco. Those puppies were ones that we didn't have a lot of. Like when we make a wine, we also have to watch the cost of it, what goes into it. So the tools were minimal. So we had to be very minimalistic on the winemaking, keep our costs down. And those puppies turned out really good and got a good following. So, but there's like 60 SKUs a year. I think I love them all.
Did you say 60?
I think we got that this year, Grayson, don't we?
Between in the pipeline and presently in the bottle over the next little bit of foreseeable future, I think the number is in and around 60 divided between the different entities. And then it'll get a bit more concise down here once a few of them fly the proverbial coop into their own individual entities, like Black Swift and Crown and Thief. They're all getting their own homes. But right now, in the whatever renegade incarnation the Hatch is, I think the number is 60. Yeah, I'll stick to that.
Yeah. Okay. We've also got a good team. Like we have a team. Like it's not just, so there's people that are taking on different. There's JR, who's just the guy with aromatic whites and rosé. There's Brody Isaac on the reds, and Corey Troji's in there working with them and managing it. So I got a team of guys. So it's not like it's not like I'm walking into the cellar and dealing with 60 SKUs. I've got a really good team that we spent the last almost 10 years working together to get a system on the wine. So
we're talking about the Hatch, Grayson Reardon. I don't know. He could be the mega god. I don't know what he is. He just
a guy with a beard, man. That's all.
Everybody's got beards, man.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Non-distinguishable. I'm just a guy who talks uses a lot of multisyllabic words that talk about liquids that I like.
All right. All right. Great. Grayson, let me get back to you for a second. How many different labels are there?
I think like the way that we've got it broken down right now as far as like subcategories, it looks like 8, but really there's like 4 mainstays. Like you have the Hatch, and then you have Black Sift and Screaming Frenzy, and then you have Crown Enthused.
The collections include the Hatch wines, Black Swift yes. Vineyards, Screaming Frenzy, yeah. Crown and Thieves, which is wicked, Gobsmacked, just had some last night, Talking Stories. Jason, how many of those do you actually get hands-on that are your own personal projects?
I oversee them all. My hands aren't getting as dirty as I'd like to be lately because I'm busy putting up these stupid wineries that we got to get up and rocking,
okay.
right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
running this stuff. So. But my hands are not, like, I'm there at Harvest, I'm out there at Crush, we're getting everything going, getting the team going, get it all organized, get the spirits up, you know, go for sushi at night and stuff like that. But once that's done, the boys are, I give them full credit for taking care of all the wines while I'm getting all these new locations.
Which is the gateway wine?
That depends on who you ask, but at least, in my opinion, I would like to know what Jay thinks too. My opinion, the house babies, whether it's like Bianco or Rosso or the new pretty pink lady that is Rosado, like the house wines are wines made the way that we want to drink wine when we just want to drink wine, which is like pretty often. That's why we play this game. I would say that those are the true gateway, because if you like those stylistically, then everything else in the lineup in one way or another should turn your crank.
Wow. Grayson?
I agree, but I think it's also, I think people are really into aesthetics, and we have marketed that label. That look is the Hatch. It's Mr. Dude with the nest head, right, with the egg. So I think they identify with that. Then they get the juice. Then they buy into the juice, and they find out there's this whole plethora of other options. So I think it starts from there. I think that's where we get them. And that whole thing was like the fun thing about this whole story is that little garage down there that cost us $500 to renovate is building water. It's like Crown and Thieves. That's why it's called the Hatch. It's an incubator for new stuff, right? So Black Swift Vineyards is going to be open in 2.5-3 weeks. Crown and Thieves in 2.5 months. I've got a plan for Gobsmack. So it's pretty neat. And for people to buy in the beginning and identify with that first label and that first drink that we did, there's a lot more coming that, you know, coming out of that. So,
Jason Parks, can you tell the listener what you're building? How many different wineries are you building right now?
Right now, today, there's 2 under construction. They're both in West Kelowna. They're both off Boucherie in a roundabout way. There's Black Swift, which also carries the sub-brand Screaming Frenzy, and then there's Crown and Thieves, which is closer to a cidery that we run called Truck 59. So those 2 are in process.
And what do they look like?
Black Swift looks like the Hatch in a tuxedo, okay. Probably. Crown and Thieves has got some issues. It looks like an old ruin. It's got a speakeasy, you know, with lots of, I don't mean to offend anybody, but lots of animal heads, and it's a little odd.
It's like an Ozzy Osbourne winery.
Yeah, I think he'd like it. I think he'd dig it.
Yeah, he'd be comfortable sure. there. Or Alice Cooper.
Yeah. Alice Cooper would for sure.
Yeah.
They could both hang out.
So any more wineries? Just those 2 now?
Well, we're working actually. We're doing a microbrewery on Boucherie called the Hatching Post, where we're crossing over the branding, and we're doing a lot of stuff involving wine with beer. That's coming up next year. There's a sparkling house across from Black Swift that's going to be called Bubblees. That is like a 50s diner type look that will be all sparkling in mason jars served with hot dogs. That's next year. And Gobsmacked, I got a plan for it, but I'm not allowed to say in case I get in trouble. I'll tell you when we're off the air.
It's like a theme park.
Yeah.
For drinkers.
Yeah. And the scary thing about it, like doing, I like doing the themes because I think people should have a lot more fun. And I also want to contribute to what we're doing here in West Kelowna. And the fear when I did it was that people would not think I take this whole thing serious or take wine serious. But I've decided to not worry what people think and just get them up and pray that the people like it. And we just got to keep getting better at making wine and putting the product first.
Grayson, what's your favorite wine from the building?
Usually depends what my wife likes, because that's the night that, you know, the luck rolls in. I don't know. I like last year's Syrah was good, Grayson, hey, that we put out. The
Yeah, that one's like a real banger for the price point.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else even approaching business like this?
Hopefully not. That's the only reason if you're successful.
But the thing is, it works for you guys, right?
It's nothing to do with us being smart. It's just we're the first ones to do it, and lucky for us, it's working. Right?
Ah, and that you know what you're doing, and actually, most of those wines turn out really well.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with the wines, and we were making them before at a place called First Estate, and without that place, none of this would have happened, but it was literally the oldest winery in BC. Other winemakers were offered to take it over before I did, and it was it's kind of a dirty place. Like, Brett was in the air, you know, it wasn't pretty. And we were pumping, there were 6,500 square feet there, and we're pumping 45,000 cases of wines out of there with Mother Nature as a cooling unit. So when you go through that with your team, and you're fighting to do that, you're still, and then now we have our new location with proper glycol, and we're a little more organized. The wine quality already, I can see it, like this year, it's already bumped up quite a bit. So I'm really excited about the future, because we got through the years of fighting to build this thing where we couldn't afford to have a production building. I got one for free.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Listen, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, Jay, but you also consult for other wineries. That's another way of me saying this guy knows what he's doing. Like, for example, he said reaching for a bottle. I fell in love with Burnt Timber at the Tofino Food and Wine Festival, and that's when I fell over backwards when I realized, Jason, that you had helped to construct this wine.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great project. And that guy was so cool. Like, we're moving the wines through our program now. But that project I told you about, the Bubba Lee's, the sparkling place, is going to be for him.
Is the tasting room open? What's happening now here as we hit June?
Presently, it's all outdoors. It's all contactless. Obviously, you can only be a group of six or less. Sweet Hatch branded PPE masks that we got made for everybody.
Wow.
So your tasting fee comes with one of those, and yeah, it's all contactless, so it's like kind of adapting like the brewery or cidery flight idea, where it's all pre-poured and then it's dropped at a separate service table away from you.
Okay, last thing, Jason, where's the food program?
That brewery I was talking about, Hatching Post, the smoke barbecue thing is going to go down in there. We're going to do that for sure. And I am looking at, my wife wants to open up a little charcuterie business called the Winemaker's Wench, which I'm very proud of her for that name.
Can your neighbors stay afloat? Do you think we're going to lose some wineries along the way?
I hope not. And if there's anything we can do to help them, they can give us a call, because it's just a hiccup. We'll all get through it together.
What's the website?
Yeah, thehatchwines.com.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Tasty Room Radio, Grayson Reardon and Jason Parks from The Hatch, and all of those other labels, all those other SKUs that we keep talking about. This is Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasty Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. They are offering free shipping for locals. They are doing a drive-through winery tent in the parking lot, respectful of social distancing. You can find The Hatch Wines at 3225 Boucherie Road, West Kelowna. They're open every day from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Online, you can find them at Hatch Wines. Or you can check out all the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. They will be open for sales this weekend, and hopefully, if all the paperwork shows up, They'll be open for tastings next weekend. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. On the line, representing John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, John Weber. What have the last 3 months been like at Orofino and in the Similkameen?
If we're talking COVID-related, it's been pretty weird, but also very busy. I mean, I just don't feel like we've really had many chances to stop and take our breath or catch our breath. Our wine club has just been exploded. So it's been very busy. Lots of stuff going on. Our staff has been working. We haven't laid anybody off. So, yeah, we continue to roll.
The audience, John, would like to know, first of all, is the Valley open? Are you open? Can they start to make plans this summer?
Yeah, I think everyone's definitely spending a lot of time trying to figure out what they're planning on doing and how they're going to open up and what it's going to look like. But yeah, all the wineries around here are planning to open, and dates are still being chosen for that opening. But you can go to Similkameen Independent Wine Growers website and find out everybody's plans and times for opening and what they're going to do.
Well, this is the first weekend in June. Are you prepared to have people knocking on your door?
We are currently open, or will be open, for curbside purchases, and also really trying to set up our reservation system in time for this weekend, the first weekend in June. And we're pretty excited about the plans. Everything's kind of coming together now. We're doing some long table, more longer experiences are possible here at Orofino. We've got an opportunity to sit at our long table and really dive into Orofino and the Similkameen. We can talk about the whole valley here, because over the last 18 years or so, we've made wine from all over the valley. So we're very well versed in what this valley can offer and all the little microclimates, which I think is something we're gonna really try to talk about and explore with our guests. Or the other thing is, you can come in here and have a 5-minute tasting as well. Guests are gonna still be able to come out to Wine Country, taste wine, and explore things just in a slightly different manner.
Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan, representing John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, John Weber. Okay, let's talk Riesling, because your Riesling portfolio is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And with the addition of the Hensby Vineyard Riesling 2017, which I think is still in stock, the Cologne 21B, and I wrote you the other night because we tasted them side by each, the Hensby Vineyard Riesling 2018 Cologne 21B and the Cologne 239, completely different Rieslings, but from the same vineyard? No.
Mm-hmm. What we've done 2018 forward, we took the Hensby Vineyard, which was planted for us back in 2006. So we've been dealing with those grapes for over a decade now. We decided to split the two clones that are planted in that vineyard into two separate bottlings, just to kind of get an idea of what each brings to the table, but also we can create two different styles of Riesling within one vineyard. So we're only taking Riesling now from our home vineyard and the Hensby Vineyard right next to us. So, but we're offering the two clonal wines, the 21B, which has some residual sugar and is highly... well, it's a dangerously drinkable bottle of wine. then there's the 239, which is super bone dry and has that really typical Orofino either acidity, bright lime, and crushed rock sort of flavor profile that we're very well known for. And that clone... really brings that to the forefront. So it was kind of cool to make wines.
True.
Trying to focus on those two clones.
The Cologne 21B from Hensby. If you were drinking it blind, you'd say it came from the Mosel.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice compliment. Thanks, Terry.
It's fantastic.
it's delicious. Yeah, it's got that residual sugar, but the acidity makes it finish clean and bright, so it's not cloying in the mouth. It's certainly not a sticky wine at all.
No.
And I just like I said, it's pretty hard to put down. So
just to say, we finished the Riesling portfolio at Orofino. Very nice. The Chardonnay still in play?
Chardonnay is from the Much Vineyard. Yeah, the 18 just got released. Delicious. We farm this 8-acre property just below us.
Okay.
On the Cawston Flats. Yeah, delicious.
The Orange Skin Contact Muscat.
Yeah, small lot, comes from our 30-year-old vines, as well as the Hensby's have a small little lot of it too. Yeah, it's a delicious orange wine that has lots of fruit. It's clean. It's, yeah, if you like that sort of skin contact style, this is a winner and won't be around too long.
If I like it, are you crazy? John Weber, the co-owner and the
winemaker and vineyard guy and many other things.
The tractor driver and the vineyard guy,
yeah.
and the man who makes the wines and crafts and, yeah, dreams these wines at Orofino. The Pinot Noir Rosé 2018.
Yeah, the...
It's out of stock, right?
No, Pinot Noir Rosé is gone, sold out. We just released the Cab Franc Rosé.
Yeah.
Which is from the Puzza Vineyard, which is around the corner in the cool Olala Gap, which is a really interesting vineyard. It's the only one that's like it anywhere around here. 3 acres of Cabernet Franc. We did 600 cases, including, I don't know, 400 bottles of mags. We did about 400 mags of it.
That is, by the way, that's a great price on the Magnum. $34.61, yep. Something like that?
Yep, plus tax, that's it. Yep. So for $40, you're going to get a couple bottles worth of wine and in a bottle that makes you, you know, you bring that to a party and everyone's your best friend.
Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan, representing John and Virginia Weber at Orofino. John Weber. Let's move on to the reds for a second. Starting with the Syrah, which I had last night.
Sure.
It actually helped me win I won the card game. So I think it was the Syrah.
Okay. Well, first of all, I get a cut of the winnings. but yeah, this is 2 Similkameen vineyards. Spends 12 months in barrel and unfined, unfiltered, all wild fermented. Mostly older barrels. There's like a few new ones involved as well, but it's basically just a real reflection of Similkameen terroir, and our style of Syrah hasn't really changed over the last 5 years. So people can, if they like that style, that's definitely it's a new one that they'll just put out. That's worth looking up.
All right, I'm excited to see the Gamay 2018 show up. Is it in stock? And how many cases did you make?
Yeah, we've got about maybe 60, 70 cases left. The 18 for sale here at the winery and some retail around the province as well. And also in Alberta as well. Bright acidity, low alcohol, and a great summer barbecue wine. It's just really easy to drink. And we chill it down for about 5 minutes.
Yep.
And drink away
the wild ferment Syrah. Did we like it?
I don't know. Did we? the 18 that's currently available, super geeky wine. It's a concrete wild fermented, low alcohol and definitely, leans towards that naturalist sort of, style of wine. There's a definite little bit of funk to it. It's a little bit polarizing. There are people who can't drink enough of it, and others are like, no, not my thing. So
okay,
there you go.
I know what they do like. They like your Red Bridge. You make a lot of it, right?
Yeah, we were happy to have it back in stock. We bottled about 1,300 cases last in March of the 18. Yeah, Cab, Merlot, Syrah blend. Again, unfined, unfiltered. Just a real, it's real wine. At a great price point, and it's taken on a bit of a life of its own, and just you can't seem to make enough of it. So we're focusing on that, and with 2018 vintage, hopefully we've made enough to keep everybody happy for a while.
We're talking the Reds from Orofino, John Weber on the line from downtown Causton. A couple of things and then I'll let you go. One is the Beleza. Yep. Beleza 2017. It was out of stock, obviously. How's it looking?
The 17 is delicious, but it's still pretty young. Like that wine, I'd like to see that sit for 5, 6, 7 years. If I, you know, if I was to buy a case of it and drink it over the next 10, you'd be pretty happy. That's a Bordeaux blend that we do. Although we're just releasing, we're just about to put out the saying that we've got 60 Magnum available for sale.
Wow!
And you can go on our, you'll be able to go on our website and pick that up. It'll be priced in, free shipping included. So if anyone's keen on getting a mag of Beleza 17, scoop it up before it's gone.
And finally, in the Reds, the Hensby Vineyard Petit Verdot.
Yeah, the we don't do it every year. Only we do a small amount of it when we choose to keep some aside from Beleza. It might be two barrels. It might be four barrels. Yeah, it's generally like a big, bold red that shows that real florality of blueberries of Petit Verdot. Delicious wine. Big, big steak wine.
John Weber on the line from Orofino, from downtown Causton. Tell me about the suites. Tell me about those gorgeous rooms you have there.
They're open and we're welcoming BC residents at the moment, I believe, that she's made some decisions on that. Are welcome to come and stay in big, huge decks overlooking the vineyards. They're gorgeous. Go online, and if anyone's interested, go check them out online. There's lots of pretty pictures.
What would be the online website address?
Orofinovineyards.com.
That's easy.
Very simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last question about survival. How are the wineries doing?
I can't speak for everybody, of course, but for us and a few of the of our friends that we've spoken with, it's just a matter of realigning and putting your resources into different ways to sell wine. Restaurants obviously have been hit super hard, and that is a big part of our business. And you know, we've cultivated those relationships for almost 20 years now. So to have them struggle like that and to lose a source of sales for us is difficult, but at the same time, people are purchasing more wine retail and also certainly on our website. You know, our brand new website's super easy to order from, so it's been good that way. We'll see what happens.
I see your food program has kicked in with the reopening of Row 14.
Yeah, man, it's so nice to have them back, and we're happy to have them.
And John, this is what I've always harped on, the fact that people would drive through Causton on their way to, or you know, South Okanagan, Penticton, Kelowna, wherever, or they would be heading to the coast. And Causton was an afterthought. The Similkameen was an afterthought. Now there's accommodations at both locations, between you and Row 14, the Clippers, and there's food. There are now places to eat, and all of a sudden you start to want to have the Similkameen as part of your day visit.
Yeah, I think the whole package is here in our valley now. There's lots for people to do for 2 or 3 days. If you stay in our suites, you'll get a package. Virginia's put together a package that'll tell you where to go, what to do, lots of things to explore. We make it very easy to chill out in the Similkameen for 2 or 3 days. But it takes all those little various amenities to make a family want to stop. And it's here now for sure. And
okay.
It's gorgeous.
And just a word of caution. There's no fishing there. It's been
nope.
Fished out.
Nope. Definitely no trout in the river.
No, you want to go move along to the next location because it's just desolate.
That's right.
Okay.
Unless you're catch and release, you can talk to me.
2152 Barcelo Road, Causton, British Columbia. Find them at orofinovineyards.com. John Weber has been my guest. Thank you for the update. He's John Weber. He is the co-owner, along with Virginia, of Orofino Vineyard and Suites in Causton. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. They will be open for sales this weekend, and hopefully, if all the paperwork shows up, they'll be open for tastings next weekend. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13. From 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We never did give a name for this feature special that we're doing, but actually I was thinking of calling it Touching All the Bases. Basically, I had made plans as we turned this year, I'm headed into January. We have five wonderful sponsors who do segment sponsorship of this show. Unsworth, Orofino, Row 14 jumped in for Clippers Farms, The Hatch up in Summerland, and Road 13 in the Golden Mile. And Road 13 have been with us a long time, and you need partnerships like this as a solid base for what you want to do. Joe Luckhurst, it started with Pam and Mick Luckhurst, and they handed off to Joe. And I think we've done several specials on the transition from the elders to Joe's vision of what Road 13 was going to be. But now we come to we're trying to just get caught up with him because he's running a mini empire there. Did I get it all right so far?
So far, that seems to be right on the money, Terry.
I don't think you or I or any one of us have ever seen something like what we're all going through right now. How did it affect you, your family, and your winery over these last 6 to 8 to 12 weeks?
Yeah, you know, it's been, I don't know, I suppose the best word for it is just a weird few months, right? You know, we're fortunate enough to be in the South Okanagan where, you know, life hasn't changed all that much for us. I mean, farming can still continue. You can still be out in the vineyard. It's easily the socially distanced there. You know, my family and I live right on the property here. So, you know, it's not a big deal for me to just walk up to the winery every day. And obviously the wine still needs to get made, but we have beautiful weather. It's stunning, but there's nobody here. There's no tourists. There's no customers coming by. And that's definitely fairly jarring for us.
But you're in the wine selling business. At some point you have to interact with your client and customer.
You know, what's been amazing to see is the way that Canadians and British Columbians have supported their local industries. And we have seen so much interaction online with our customers, people emailing us, calling in, joining our video tastings, anything like that. And people are continuing to buy wines and get them shipped out. And, you know, people aren't necessarily just buying, you know, their kind of everyday drinkers or, you know, the inexpensive stuff. I feel like people are treating themselves and buying wines that are a bit more premium. And, you know, if they're going to be stuck at home and they want to drink, may as well drink something that's really cool and really good. So, you know, up until this point, while it's been very quiet, we've still seen just a tremendous amount of wine go out the door, and that's all due to the support of our neighbors.
Is it fair to say that wine has helped some people get through?
It did, but I think wine still lends a sense of comfort, a sense of normalcy. You know, the bottle, the wine that was in the bottle that you bought before this started is still the same wine. Right? The wine that you're buying from the winery is still the same product. Nothing that's gone on in the world has changed that. And it's something that you can still connect you back to the things you enjoy doing. You know, it's how many times have we seen people doing, a wine evening with friends over Zoom or anything like that? It's something that you can still bond over and talk about. So.
And how's the community around you? How's it feel?
everybody seems to be in very good spirits. I haven't talked to too many people who feel devastated by this yet, although, you know, there are obviously nerves. But I think everyone's in the same boat as us, as far as they've seen tremendous support from our locals.
I think you would have seen the headlines, or at least heard the headlines, about maybe 30% of the restaurants affected here will not come back. How are the wineries going to survive, do you think?
You know, it still remains to be seen. You know, we're going to be looking carefully to what sort of experiences we're offering for customers over this summer, as obviously we're, you know, we can't fill the tasting rooms up with people anymore. But, you know, I know in our case, we're looking at this in a way that we were already looking to change some of the experiences we offer at Road 13. And this has kind of given us the kick in the pants to really go into it and really see what we've done in the past, where we've been lacking, where we've been successful, and build on that and take everything at Road 13 up to the next level. And particularly with having to move to reservation only now and having fewer customers in, we really have to focus on that experience for every individual person. And I see a lot of wineries doing that same thing. And I think once things get back to normal, you're going to see a very, very different Okanagan Valley.
So you reopened June the 1st. This is good. Mm-hmm. And I assume that whatever that new experience at Road 13 is, will evolve as you go week to week.
Absolutely. You know, we're waiting to see just kind of which way the wind is blowing and how many visitors we get and what we are and aren't allowed to do. You know, our biggest thing is that we want to make sure our guests and our staff are all safe and happy and healthy. And then after that, provide the experience where if you're going to take the time to come out to the Okanagan, that you're seeing something special, and that will continue to evolve.
You have a new winemaker, Barclay Robinson. Do you know what his favorite wine to grow is? His favorite grape?
Well, you know, we were arguing about that. I said it should be Syrah. He said it's Cab Sauv. Yeah. So I still need to beat him down a little bit and get him to my level, but we'll see.
He wants to make Cab Sauv.
He loves Cab Sauv. We have our Road 13 Cab Sauv, and then we have our Jackpot Cab Sauv as well on our upper tier.
Joe Luckhurst, Road 13. The things we know Road 13 for, beyond the wines, the dinner series, for example, I'm sure you've had to can that, right?
Well, we are hoping to still continue with our dinners this year. Obviously, they're going to look a little bit different. People are going to be a bit more spread out. They might be kind of an indoor-outdoor affair as well. But, you know, in talking with our culinary partner, Chris Van Hooydonk, down at Backyard Farm, we believe that we can do this in a responsible way and still provide the same experience.
Ah, very nice. What else? Anything else this summer that we could sort of keep an eye out for?
Well, you know, if you're out here, every Tuesday, we're going to do our dog days. So we have another great partner, the Wienery, that will be coming up every Tuesday, producing gourmet hot dogs, including some, I think, specific Road 13 dogs. And it's always been one of my great pleasures, pairing wine with hot dogs, because I love hot dogs. So that one should be really, really fun.
What is in the Road 13 hot dog?
You know, I haven't actually seen his menu yet. We kind of gave him some of our wines, made sure he was really familiar with what we do, and then we're trusting him to build something that's going to be really specific to who we are and our product.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. Now, the rosé, is that the Honest John rosé?
No, this is a brand new rosé. Well, brand new as of last year. So starting last year, we have the Honest John's Rosé, which, of course, a lot of people are going to be familiar with. It's what you can find from us at the market, at BC liquor stores, that sort of thing. But we wanted to do kind of a different style of rosé for the winery. So we have a rosé that's a much more light pink, a bit drier even than the Honest John's Rosé, and a bit more in kind of like that old world Provence style. We just released the 2019 vintage of that.
Is it a blend?
It is. It has Pinot Noir and Gamay Noir predominantly.
How good is that? Come on. Those are two of the best on the planet.
I know. I absolutely love Gamay. And, of course, as you know, we make a single varietal Gamay now, too. And I just can't get enough of it. I want to grow more.
What's the color? Provence?
Yeah, just a really light pink, almost kind of salmon color to it overall, but just very, very delicate.
Strawberries?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, my first bottle of it I opened down at my house, and my daughter wanted to smell it, and she picked it up and completely uncued said, "Oh, yeah, it tastes like strawberries." So, yeah.
wait a minute. Hold on a second. She's 4 years old?
Oh yeah. She is a little wine connoisseur. She grabs our glass, swirls it, takes a nice smell, talks to us about what it is, and yeah.
There's the true chip off the old block.
Absolutely.
Which leads me to the 2019 chip off the old block Chenin Blanc. You know, I have developed an affinity for your Chenin Blanc. You've planted more.
Yes.
How many cases were you able to make?
So that chip off the old block Chenin, we are talking about, it was a pretty low crop year, actually. We're only talking about 300 cases or so for the 2019.
Hmm.
But, you know, beautiful as ever, you know, our chip off the old block, those vines were originally propagated from taking cuttings of our old vines planted in 1968. And we use those young vines to produce a more youthful, bright, fresh style of Chenin than we would have seen with our old vine Chenin Blanc. And just something that is made to be just kind of your awesome hot day patio drinker, awesome with spicy foods.
It is fantastic for everything, actually. What's the price point on the Viognier?
The Viognier is, I think, $25.99 plus tax.
The Rosé?
The Rosé is $24.99.
That's the 2019 Rosé. And the 2019 Absolutely. Chip off the old block, Chenin Blanc.
And now you're questioning me. I didn't do my homework. I think we're sitting at $22.99.
You can always change your mind.
It's true.
Now, any surprises, Joe? Anything you want to tease us with?
Well, you know, I had a pet project, so something that I'd been wanting to do for a really, really long time. And about 3 years ago, made our first crack at it that we just labeled and put in bottle 2 weeks ago. And that is our first ever traditional method sparkling Syrah. Oh, yeah. So very, very small production on that. I think it's probably only going to go to Wine Club, at least for the first release of it. We only did about 100 cases altogether of it, but I am thrilled. I think it's absolutely awesome.
Is it dark and bubbly?
Oh, yeah. No, it's we wanted to do something that was kind of, I suppose you could say, the traditional Aussie style with those great sparkling Shirazes, but do one that was kind of born in BC.
You're doing your tastings every Thursday?
Tire side tastings. Because we're generally sitting by the tractor, at least we try to be. Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m., it's Barclay and myself kind of talking about whatever is the week's promotion or package is.
Road 13 is alive and well.
We are thriving. You know, it's a weird time of year, but overall, we are happy. We are healthy. The wine is great. Weather is beautiful. We really don't have any right to complain. We are we're all doing great.
You are shipping?
We are shipping absolutely anywhere in Canada. You can hop on our website. You can give us a call. Everything that's in bottle is available, and we're shipping out in any quantity.
I have recommended that people join your wine club, but you might want to tell them maybe one or two reasons why right now it would be a good idea.
Well, we were just talking about that sparkling Syrah. And I mean, that for me would cause me to join a wine club. If the only way I could get my hands on a sparkling Syrah were to be a wine club member, absolutely. It's just such limited production. It's the only way we'll be able to do it for the time being. But that would be that one. But otherwise, more and more kind of really small lots exclusives for our wine club members. You know, we have a ton of smaller fermentation tanks that allow us a lot of flexibility. And we're going to be trying a lot of fun stuff in the near future.
Joe, one final thing. Here we are, early June. What's to come in terms of releases June, July, August?
June, July, August. Well, you know, the biggest one that I can think of right now, other than that sparkling Syrah, is our Gamay Noir.
Wow.
The Gamay should be coming out later in June. And for me, like, you want to talk about a refreshing red that's amazing for the summer that you can serve chilled, compares with anything, that Gamay is it, man. Absolutely adore that.
And just for the audience out there, there's two wines that I really think you should try. Just try. You don't like it? Move on. Try the Viognier. You know you're going to love the Rosé. Try the Viognier and try their Gamay. Gamay is the grape that I think the Okanagan will become famous for because it's gorgeous.
It is. It's beautiful. It does well in every part of the valley. Very distinct, different styles, but the same kind of level of quality no matter where you are. It's become kind of one of my new obsessions.
Joe, let's review. Tasting room is open.
Absolutely. As of June 1st, we are open to the public. We are reservation only, and you can book your reso online or just give us a call.
You're doing special wine club events?
We will have our wine club pickup party happening, I think, in late June. And that should be a fun one. And I think the first opportunity to potentially try the sparkling Syrah.
And how do you make the appointment? Do you go to the website?
You can go to the website to make your reservation for the tasting room. If you're a club member, you'll get an email that have all the details about the pickup party for you.
Thank you for your support. He's Joe Luckhurst, General Manager, Road 13 on the Golden Mile. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13. From 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com.